that's better. If you want to follow along, we're going to be in the book of Hebrews, chapter 3. A couple of days ago, I went with some friends on a double date. We did an escape room. Has anyone ever done an escape room? You go in, and you got to solve puzzles and get out. I think parents have got to be the most incredible at escape rooms, because I believe it is, with four kids, sometimes it is a lot harder to escape our own house with all the kids than it is to go through an escape room and do the puzzles. But I remember a few days ago, we finally get in the car. Our friends have three kids, we have four kids. So we get in the car, and the first thing I say to them is, "Do you hear that?" And after a few moments of trying to process what I'm asking, my friend says, "Oh, right, it's quiet." And I just kind of want to say that after last night, do you hear this? It's quiet. I don't have to yell at you. It's wonderful. Hebrews chapter 3. Hebrews is just one message this week from the book of Hebrews. In Hebrews, coming to this book, realizing it's different than many other books in the New Testament. A lot of other books in the New Testament are written as letters. You've got the Gospels, but you have the letters from Paul, John, Peter. These books, as they're written, are written most often to churches. If you were reading 2 Corinthians, you would know that Paul is actually responding to a letter the Corinthians wrote to him. Letters are structured often as responses to what the churches are going through or what they're dealing with. It's no surprise that in 2 Corinthians, the Corinthians write a letter to Paul, and then in response to that letter, Paul responds with 2 Corinthians. That's why Paul quotes the Corinthians in many instances, and then in many cases debunks what they say, or he responds to what they're saying, because that's how a letter is structured. The writer is responding to the church. What's interesting about Hebrews is that Hebrews is not primarily thought of as a letter, because in Hebrews, the writer, we don't know who the writer is. There's lots of debate on who that might be, but the writer of Hebrews is not writing to a specific church, but to the Jews that are dispersed. Okay, so it's not written the same way. He's not just responding to a particular church and the issues that they're dealing with. He's not moving from one issue to the next issue to the next issue. Actually, I think what I would encourage you is that when you read Hebrews, read it less like a letter and more like a sermon. And like any good sermon, the writer of Hebrews, I call the writer of Hebrews the preacher or the evangelist, because this is a sermon for the church. This is a sermon for the Jews. But like any good sermon, there's really only one idea. Now, there might be multiple points underneath that idea, but as you read through Hebrews, there's really only one thing on this preacher's mind. There's only one thing he wants you to walk away with, one concept you need to take away from the book of Hebrews. And so that he doesn't make you guess, he begins at the very beginning like a good introduction, and he tells you right out of the gate, this is the idea, this is the concept, this is the thing that I want you to walk away with, the concept, the idea of the sermon. You see that in chapter 1, verse 1, which says this: "In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir over all things, and through whom also he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven." See, right here, out the gate, you see the focus of the book of Hebrews is the person of Jesus. what the preacher in Hebrews is going to develop from here is the idea that Jesus is greater than all other revelation that the Jews have ever had. Jesus is greater than all of that revelation. Now, he doesn't look at that revelation and say that all this revelation is bad or evil or even discarded, but rather he says that Jesus is superior to all of this. Immediately, in verse 4, he argues, "So he, Jesus, became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs." So he says about the angels, all the revelation, the way that God spoke through the angels, Jesus is superior to the angels. We already read in verse 1 that he spoke in the past by our ancestors. Today, now he speaks through his son. All the revelation through the prophets, all through Elijah, all that God has spoken, as good as it is, and it's not discarded, it's not put away, it's not put aside, Jesus is superior. Chapter 3, you see now the preacher is talking about Moses, and he says Jesus is greater than Moses. If you're reading the NIV, you've got the title. The title for that section is Jesus is greater than Moses. So with that in mind, I would like to read chapter 3, verse 1. It says, "Therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your eyes on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and our high priest." Now, this is the verse that I want to focus on because, again, this is the idea that all of this that God has spoken in the past, as important as it is, Jesus is greater than all of that revelation. The idea is this theology of fulfillment theology. I really like the idea of fulfillment theology, because fulfillment theology doesn't discard the revelation of the past, but rather it says that all the revelation, all that God said through Moses and through the angels, is now sucked into and fulfilled in the person of Jesus. So fulfillment theology is very important. For example, I mentioned I have a 4-year-old daughter. My 4-year-old daughter, her name is Kira, and she is learning her ABCs. So we're singing the song with her, and maybe a few months ago, my daughter Kira comes up to me and says, "Daddy, Daddy, can I say to you my ABCs?" My 4-year-old daughter starts singing the ABCs. She got most of the letters correct. So she sings the ABCs. And after she sings her ABCs to me, I'm just the proudest beaming father in that moment, right? I mean, she can sing her ABCs. I'm proud of her. Imagine my 4-year-old daughter grows up to be 34. And she comes to Dad, and she says, "Dad, can I sing to you my ABCs?" Then she stands there and she sings her ABCs to me. You know what I'm going to do in that moment? Okay. I mean, I'm still proud of her, but like, we know that when she's 4 years old, she's going to sing her ABCs, but when she's 34 years old, she's going to come to a whole new level, which is called reading. The idea of reading is that when you read, it's a whole different level. But in the idea of reading, you don't discard the ABCs. You don't get rid of the ABCs. In fact, they're part of the foundation of reading. But the ABCs are sucked into this idea of reading. It's a whole new level. Jesus is the fulfillment of all that God has said. Inconsistency with what God has said. I believe that Jesus has always been and always will be plan A. I've heard people before articulate that the Old Testament is plan A and that Jesus is plan B, as if he tried the law and when it didn't work, well, now let's try Jesus. I don't buy that. Jesus has always been plan A. Jesus has always been what God has purposed for us. Fulfillment theology. You're going to see it in verse 1 as we read where he says that in the very end where he says, fix your eyes on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. Concept of an apostle is that, we have apostles in the early church. You have the 12 apostles who they go out and their primary purpose was to steward the message. They would go sometimes from church to church. They would establish churches, and in some cases they would stay in a particular city or church for a longer period of time. They would, as Paul would do, would write letters back to churches to encourage them or to correct them in many cases. But in every instance, their primary role was to steward the message. Do you know that Jesus is our great apostle? Not only does Jesus steward the message, he is the message. He is the message. So he is the original message. He is the apostle, as the preacher says. And secondly, he says that he's our great high priest. There were a lot of high priests in the Old Testament, but you understand Jesus is our great high priest. He is the original high priest. The idea of a high priest, one of the major ideas of a high priest is that a high priest was a mediator between God and us. Jesus is our great, great mediator between God and us. In fact, the way that he does that is that Jesus takes humanity into himself and becomes 100% human, while also being 100% God. And it's important, he's not 50% human and 50% God. That would make the math work a little better. That's not the point. He's 100% man and 100% God. In fact, we read just verses before chapter 3, verse 1, where he says in verse 17, for this reason he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Do you know when he took humanity into himself and is 100% human, that it was as if he was pushing the limits on what that looked like? You see, if at any moment he had some sort of advantage over you, you could look at Jesus and say, well, I don't have a shot. But when Jesus came, he did not come, and he wasn't born in a major hospital. He came and was born in a manger. As he grew up in Nazareth, which the phrase is, can anything good come from Nazareth? See, he wasn't born in a good, like a fancy town. He was born in Nazareth. He wasn't born in a family that had great wealth. He was born in a family that was poor. See, he pushed the limits on this. He was fully human. See, God took everything that distinguished you from him, and he eliminated it and brought Jesus to our level. Now, we've got to be careful. Because while Jesus was fully human in every way, he was without sin. Have you ever heard the phrase, like if somebody sins or if they make a mistake, they might say something like, well, I'm only human. You ever heard that before? As if to say, sin or my mistake is what makes me human. Can I suggest to you that sin is not what makes you human? And I can prove it. Because Jesus was fully human and was without sin. Adam and Eve were created and were fully human and were without sin. Sin is not what makes you human. I would argue sin is what makes you less than human. It breaks down what God created in humanity. So you see, Jesus is the great mediator. He understands our weaknesses. That's the message of Hebrews. See, he took on our weakness. He understands our weakness. So he is our mediator who understands who we are and what we've been through. So now he says, fix your eyes on Jesus, our great apostle and our high priest. Jesus is plan A. A few years ago, I've always talked about this idea of progressive revelation. I believe very firmly in progressive revelation. Progressive revelation is the idea that when Adam and Eve sinned, why did God not just send his son right away to die on a cross for Adam and Eve the moment that Adam and Eve sinned? The reason is progressive revelation. They weren't ready for Jesus. So what God does in progressive revelation is he brings us to a place until we receive the full revelation of Jesus, plan A. For example, you have Moses who received the law, and God speaks to Moses through the law, and then what you have in progressive revelation, now as we move forward through time, you have Elijah. Elijah was the prophet who prophesied about Jesus and called the Israelites back to God. But then what you have, as you progress through that, now you have Jesus. Now, we got to be careful here, because progressive revelation is in consistency with fulfillment theology. The idea that we progress and now we see Jesus, who is the fulfillment of all that God ever wanted to say. The Gospel of John starts with, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. You know why Jesus is called the Word in John? It's because everything God ever wanted to say, he said it in the person of Jesus. Progressive revelation until Jesus, and he is the fulfillment of all God has spoken in consistency with what God has said. I've believed that my whole life. I came to this camp, was talking about progressive revelation. An evangelist came up to me and said, I believe in progressive revelation. Have you heard this new theology coming out called continuing revelation? Has anyone ever heard of continuing revelation? I'm just curious. Continuing revelation, it almost sounds like progressive, but it's not. Continuing revelation starts with Moses. Think of Moses. You start with Moses, progresses to Elijah, who's prophesying about Jesus coming. Then you have Jesus as we progress in the revelation, or as we continue in revelation. Continuing revelation suggests that after Jesus, God has more to say to us. God has new truths to speak to the church beyond Jesus and beyond his word. I do not believe in continuing revelation. I believe the scriptures, while I would not encourage us to think of the scriptures as if it has endless complexity, I believe it does have endless depth. I'm convinced for all of eternity, we're going to still be studying this thing, learning more about who he is. You know why heaven is never going to get boring? It's because God is infinite. And you will always be learning more of who he is. There will always be more of Jesus in terms of depth. Jesus is enough. The writer of Hebrews says these words, which is the call to the church, fix your eyes on Jesus. Jesus is the whole deal. I don't believe there's anything beyond Jesus. I don't think there's anything more than Jesus. I think Jesus is sufficient and he is enough. I've decided that. In my life, traveling 10 years in evangelism, 7 years as a pastor and a part-time evangelist, I have seen the church, in many cases, almost get it right. Almost get the focus right. You know how easy it is to get our focus off of Jesus? See, the message last night was about that very same idea. The one purpose of the enemy is to get our focus off of Jesus. I think every temptation, though temptation has many different forms, it has one purpose: to get our focus off of Jesus. That's the one thing he can, and if he can get our focus off of Jesus, the enemy can get our focus off of Jesus through good things, even churchy things, I think he'll get our focus off of Jesus. It is the one purpose. And the writer of Hebrews reminds us, fix our eyes on Jesus. The idea of fixing our eyes on Jesus is that instead of looking into our world to understand our identity and who we are, instead of looking at our world and looking at other people and settling for who we are, instead of doing that, the idea is to look up at Jesus and realize that's who we are. If you want to know what humanity is, we don't look at other people and say, well, I'm only human. That's not how we know who we are. We look up at Jesus to discover who we are. You know that a lot of times we talk about Jesus' death, resurrection, but sometimes we kind of skip over the ascension. Do you know the whole idea of the ascension is that Jesus takes himself, in Philippians we see, he humbles himself, becomes obedient, even to death on a cross. He puts himself to the lowest place, even to a servant. The ascension is the idea that humanity, while Jesus takes humanity into himself, in its weakness, Jesus, in the ascension, restores humanity to its rightful place as we were created. Fix our eyes on Jesus. So many times, we almost get it right. I was at a camp. I understand you know a friend of mine, John Juneman. I was doing a camp with John Juneman, another camp in Ohio, and there's a weird spiritual thing going on behind the scenes at this camp. There was a group of people led by a lady who, during Bible study, explicitly said that she does not believe in the Trinity, does not believe in the New Testament, and oddly enough, believes and was so focused and running after miracles, signs, and wonders. Interestingly enough, I believe that God is doing miracles today. I believe God is doing physical miracles in the present. I have seen it. I have experienced it. What this lady was doing in seeking after, as the focus of her life, was miracles, signs, and wonders. Her focus was off. Jesus is our focus, and he is the one who does miracles when he does them. But while I'm at this camp, I think it was a Thursday night of service, after the sermon, I come down, I'm in the front row, and this girl gets up, and she comes to the altar right over here, and the best I can describe it is her hands are contorted and guttural sounds. I've never seen this before. Guttural sounds. She's screaming. She's yelling. The lady who does not believe in the Trinity, does not believe in Jesus, but believes in miracles, wonders, and signs, she comes down. Her group, her posse, comes with her. And they're screaming and yelling for a demon to come out. I remember sitting there, and all I could think in my head was, this is a show. It's a show. They want to put something in their belt, right? They're trying to show off. They're trying to make something happen. They're trying to force, but they don't believe in Jesus. He's not the focus. About 5 minutes into it, good friend of mine, his name is Tab Beechler. He was leading worship. We're trying to sing Great is Thy Faithfulness. It's really hard to sing Great is Thy Faithfulness when someone's in the front row screaming like she was, okay? But there was something spiritual, absolutely something spiritual going on, significant going on. I believe it was real. Sitting there, one of the girls who came up and was kind of like half in on the posse and kind of half out, like kind of in the middle. She had grown up with at the camp. She looks over at me because nothing was working. This, like, the demon wasn't coming out, assuming that's what was going on. There wasn't a healing. And so she finally, after about 5-10 minutes of this, looks at me and does one of these. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, what am I going to do? I don't do this as a hobby. What am I going to do? And I remember in that moment, saying, like, knowing all of this was going on with this group, this focus on miracles, signs, and wonders, I remember praying to Jesus and saying, Jesus, what do I do? I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And I remember as I stepped out, I started walking forward. When I hit about right there, I felt Jesus say to me, whatever you do, this cannot be a show. And I walked up to this young girl, and I knelt down, and I prayed in contrast to the screaming and yelling that was going on. I prayed, Jesus, would you come and deliver this girl from whatever oppression or whatever it is that she's dealing with? Would you heal her? And in that moment, I looked at her and I said, how do you feel? And her hands released, the tension fell away, and she looked up and she said, I'm free. What I didn't know is she was deaf in one of her ears, and she said that right after that prayer, she received hearing in her ear. She used to talk really loud, like she would like yell at you when she talked because she couldn't hear, and she started to get really quiet for the rest of the camp because she's like, I can hear again. When I talk about signs, miracles, and wonders, I don't want you to hear that I don't believe in them. I believe God did a miracle and a wonder, but you understand it is not the focus. Jesus is our focus. In fact, I think this in terms of holiness. I am a holiness preacher through and through, but you understand holiness is not our focus. Jesus is our focus, and he is the one who makes us holy. He makes us holy. It is a real thing. And you realize people in our world are looking at us, asking the question, does holiness work? And I just want to look at you and say, when people look at you, holiness does work. It does work. But he is our focus. And he's the one who makes us holy. I remember I was at another camp the same year, it was 3 weeks later, at another camp in Vermont. Phenomenal camp. But I remember I was preaching alongside someone else. And I just remember there was a focus. The focus was on miracles the whole week. And I just remember feeling so uncomfortable after experiencing all of this. And the Lord took me to a passage in John. John chapter 6, when Jesus is 2.5 years into ministry, and you have the crowds that are following him to the point where there are 5,000 men, but really it's 12 to 20,000 people. And imagine, by the way, you know, think about this. Just the fact that in 2.5 years of ministry, his church grew to 20,000 people, essentially. The following of people. And after he does this miracle where he multiplies the bread and the fish, Jesus confronts the group, and he essentially says, you're looking for me not because you saw the sign, which, by the way, a sign in John's gospel was always a sign that, like a sign on the road that pointed you back to Jesus. And so Jesus says, you're looking for me not because you saw the sign, not because you saw me, not because I'm your focus, but because you ate the loaves and you had your fill. And then as you progress through the passage, Jesus, as he's confronting them, he finally, they're like, listen, if you just show us a sign, if you could show us a miracle, we'll believe you. And then they say, let me give you an example. The Jews, they give him an example. They say, our forefathers, they ate the manna in the desert and they had their fill. if you could do that, we'll believe you. You realize the irony in that statement, right? You know the miracle Jesus just did? He multiplied the bread and the fish. They didn't want Jesus, they wanted the miracle. And the whole message that Jesus has as he goes through the passage is he says, when they ask for a miracle, he says, I am the bread of life. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. You know what Jesus is saying? What if I'm the miracle? I remember being at the camp and people were coming forward for healing. And I'm telling you, this is a pastor's heart. People would come for miracles, and people did, I believe, genuinely get healed. But in my pastor's heart, I remember sitting in the back, and I could see people in the back. They were saying, what about me? Have you ever been there where you see somebody else get healed and you're thinking, well, what about me? You know, every healing throughout human history is temporary. In fact, in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, it's the great love passage where Jesus says, you know, if I prophesy in the tongues of men and of angels, but if I have not love, I have nothing. And then he comes down, I believe it's to verse 4, where he comes down to verse 4 and he says, where there are tongues, they will cease. Where there is prophecy, it will be stilled. And so what he's saying is, miracles, wonders, and signs, prophecies, and healings, they're temporary. They won't last. Do you know, miracles of healings, it's a temporary thing for a fallen world. You know why there won't be healing in heaven? Because we're all going to be healed. You know why there won't be prophecy in heaven? All will be revealed. So what Paul's saying is, all of these things are temporary. They're good. They're temporary. In fact, then he goes, as he goes down through the passage, he says, "I when I was a child, I thought like a child." You know what he's saying? He's saying these things, as important as they are, they're childlike things in comparison to faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love, because love never fails. Jesus is the focus. Fix our eyes on him. What if he is the miracle? You see, if I don't ever get a healing from the things that I'm dealing with, the physical healing, I am convinced he's enough. I am convinced that he is the miracle. Has anyone ever seen the new animated David movie? Anyone seen the David movie? One of us? Okay, well, that's two of us, I guess. Okay, a three, good. I don't know. I think we watched it because we figured it was a kids movie, and as parents with kids, you watch the kids movies. Got through the movie and I thought, man, this is one of the most incredible movies that have come out in the last few years. And at the very end, you've got David, and the Amalekites have captured the Israelites. And David is sitting there captured. And it's this moment where you get the sense of they're defeated. And David sings this song. It's called the reprieve or reprieve. I don't know. It's a music term. One of those. Reprieve? Reprise. That goes to show you. So this is why I'm not going to sing this week. Reprise. And the song had hit me so hard, because the truth of this is what he says as they're about to be defeated. He says, the Lord is my light. Whom shall I fear? Stronghold of my life. Whom shall I fear? Though arrows may fly by day and by night, I will not be afraid. The only thing I want is to dwell with the Lord. If we don't win today, he is still my reward. I have decided that that is true of my life. Even if the church doesn't grow, even if my physical health fails, even if things don't go my way, even if I lose my job, fill in the blank. Though arrows may fly by day or by night, he is still my reward. Jesus is the focus, and he is enough. And so often in church, we almost have it right, but we get distracted with other things that, though they are good, they are not the focus. Would you fix your eyes on Jesus? Don't look out into your world and decide who you are. Look up at him, fix your eyes on him to discover who you are in Christ. Jesus, you are the miracle. You are enough. You are plan A. I need not more than you or anything beyond you, because everything you ever wanted to say, you said it in the person of Jesus. And so Jesus, for camp meeting to happen, for revival to happen, it will take people who fix our eyes on you in a world that is broken, that is asking a question. Does the Christian life work? Does holiness work? I want to say that only when we fix our eyes on Jesus does it work, and boy, does it work. And so Jesus, could we spend these moments fixing our eyes on you? If we have been distracted, if there are other things that have taken our attention, may we take this moment and fix our eyes on you. You are our great apostle, the message, and you are our mediator. Would you mediate today between us and God? As Beth comes, the altars are open if you'd like to respond. Would you make Jesus your focus?